If you want to get into more of that traditional influencer marketing, I suggest don't just dive right in. The best thing you can do is kind of sit back, really do your research, and find influencers who truly align with your brand, who align with your core values. Engage with their content on the regular. Get to know them for a few months before you start pitching them. One, you might, after following them for a few months, maybe they're posting things that you're not super comfortable with, or you've realized, okay, their audience isn't the same as the audience you're looking to attract.
Welcome back to the Honest Marketing Podcast, where you learn proven strategies to grow your business without selling your soul. I'm your host, Travis Albritton, and today I had the pleasure of interviewing Ashley Stanford, who has quite an eclectic background in digital marketing, currently works with several companies in the online event space and the in-person event space, doing digital marketing, consulting, and growth. So in this episode, we're going to talk specifically about events, ticketing systems, how they work. And don't worry, if you don't sell events or tickets or anything like that, there's a lot of really great principles that we unpack as far as how do you leverage people coming into your funnel, into your pipeline to tap into their friend network and really get that network effect with your marketing to stretch your ad dollars to get more results for the ad spend that you already have. And then we also talk quite a bit towards the end on really the ins and outs of influencer marketing. How do you generate that user-generated content, people talking about you organically, naturally, whether it's an official partnership that you make with an actual influencer through an agency, or if it's just somebody that you're tapping into to spread the word about what you're doing. We talk about the ins and the outs and the things that you need to consider there. So if you've ever considered influencer marketing or tapping into network effects to help grow your business, this is going to be a great episode for you. Now, definitely make sure to stick around to the very end where I'll give you my number one takeaway, but here it is. Let's dive in. Well, Ashley, welcome to the Honest Marketing Podcast. Super excited to have you here.
Thank you, Travis. I'm excited to be here.
So before we dig into kind of the meat of our conversation, I would love for you to just give a quick journey of your eclectic background as it pertains to entrepreneurship and digital marketing, because you have quite a few ventures under your portfolio.
I do. I'm gonna take it way back and start. A lot of times people want to know how I even got into marketing. So kind of take you on that journey if you want to go that far back.
Sure, go for it.
So full transparency, it was really the only thing I got a good grade in high school. So marketing just seemed like a natural transition for me going into college and starting a career. But the love for marketing really came from playing video games. Loved playing video games growing up. My brother and I really only had a couple games. One of those games being Mario Brothers. So big Mario fan. And essentially, once you beat that game, like, you're done. And it isn't the world that we live in today where you can just so easily buy new video games like our kids these days have the luxury of. We had that one game that I would play over and over again. So we would have to create different challenges for ourselves. So we would play and say, okay, this round, let's collect as many coins as we possibly can. Or another round, we'd say, you know, let's see how quickly we can beat the whole game. And we create these different kind of challenges for us along the way. And each time we'd get better and better, just kind of optimizing our journey and beating the Mario Brothers game or Star Fox. Also loved Star Fox. So as I got into marketing, the first thing that I started experimenting with was search engine optimization. And totally different game now. Back when I started my career about 18 years ago. So SEO today is different than SEO back then. But back then, it was pretty simple to get to the top of search engines for a lot of, you know, small to medium sized businesses, you know, a couple tweaks here and there on your website, wait 2 weeks, and then you'll see, you know, you're at the top of the search engines. I loved that. It felt like a video game to me. And that is kind of how I keep my career going and just always finding like new marketing channels to bring in, new ways to kind of turn it into a game and optimize what we're doing to get the best results.
Yeah, I love that, because marketing definitely is a game where there's not like a predetermined set of outcomes. You're kind of experimenting along the way. You're trying things, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, pivoting, adjusting. And you're right. You can't just like hide keywords and white on the margins anymore to increase your search rank on Google. So the things that used to work, yeah, they don't work so much anymore. Tell me a little bit about TicketSocket, the company that you currently work with that does white label ticketing for events and companies.
Registration and software. We power a lot of brands that you might know, Spartan Races, Ironman, you know, Color Runs, Lantern Festivals, all your major circuses, all kinds of different events, really. And so my role at TicketSocket is to support our clients with their marketing strategies. So it could be as simple as just, you know, helping them get set up. A lot of times they'll have their own marketing team, making sure they know how to integrate their third-party tools. And some clients I work very intimately with and will actually help manage their team or even execute their emails or Facebook ads. And so essentially my goal is to help them sell as many tickets as possible without having to spend more money. So again, finding all those ways, how can we optimize what you got going in your sales funnel right now and help you improve and sell more tickets?
And I imagine one of those strategies was the, you know, the compounding word of mouth engine that you eventually spun off as Ice Cream Social, right? This idea that people signing up can then have an incentive to share it and to encourage that word of mouth. So tell me a little bit about how that company, that new separate company, was born out of a need that you were seeing with these clients of how do we get more juice out of our marketing budgets? How do we capture the traffic we're already seeing and get even more results from it? And then that turned into a whole other business enterprise.
Yeah. I mean, you really set that up for me, Travis. That was like a good intro for Ice Cream Social. Ice Cream Social, as you mentioned, essentially compounds that word of mouth marketing. So it's a social referral tool that at one time was just a feature set inside of TicketSocket, which was born from the need of our clients needing to sell more tickets, but didn't want to spend more money, didn't want to spend more money on Facebook ads or whatever the case may be. And so we found a way to turn all of their customers into influencers for their event. And the idea behind it is, you know, different than what other people may think of an influencer. A lot of times we think of an influencer as somebody with, you know, 100,000, a million followers on Instagram, TikTok, whatever the case may be. And our philosophy is anyone can be an influencer, even if they're not on social media. Because at the end of the day, we all have friends, we all have family that we're talking to in real life, because real life takes place outside of social media. And, you know, maybe text messaging. And so we essentially created a tool that helps facilitate that word of mouth marketing online. And it really took off, performed really well for our clients. And then COVID hit, and events is not a great industry to be in when they're
not good timing. Yeah,
a little bit, you know, we didn't want to shut down the company or anything. So we essentially, you know, moved a lot of our people from working on TicketSocket to working on Ice Cream Social. So we peeled off this feature of TicketSocket, made it its own standalone product and company, and that continues to do very well too. NBC Comcast made an investment in our company, so humble brag there.
No, that's great. That's super great. Now, I'm curious, you know, when you started TicketSocket, what, 6-ish years ago? Is that about right?
Pushing.
Okay. 15. Okay. LinkedIn led me astray. No, that's great.
I had to expand my horizons in digital marketing and learn more of all the different marketing channels. So I did go off for a while and do a lot of consulting before I came back to TicketSocket full time.
Sure. Well, and I imagine, you know, at that time period, that time frame, 12, 15 years ago, you know, a lot of the bigger players now that do events, ticketing and services, whether it's the big guys like Ticketmaster or StubHub, all the way to like SeatGeeks and Vivid Seats, and, you know, what would make TicketSocket really appealing to these events organizations that want to be able to kind of have control of their own ticketing system rather than piggybacking on somebody else's technology? Like, what's the value of working with TicketSocket versus partnering up with Vivid Seats to sell events?
Sure. So a lot of our clients come to us for that exact reason. Nobody knows us as a household name. It's not a place you go to buy tickets to an event. You're not going to TicketSocket.com. And so the philosophy behind that is all of our customers own their own data, which is so important these days. They own their own money and they own their brand and technology. And so what that means is with some of these other ticketing companies, won't name any names, but the data, you're sharing that customer database. And they also own your customers. And they're also remarketing your customers' competing events or, you know, things also happening that weekend or you know, whatever the case may be. So we make sure your database is your own database and you can continue to nurture your own customers the way that you want to. And then money, you are the merchant of record. So you process your own credit cards. We connect it to your system. And that way, one thing that happened during COVID, which was really difficult for a lot of events, is they were working with some of these larger household names that you might know to buy tickets. And when COVID hit, those ticketing companies held all the funds for those events. And they weren't going to pay the event company until that event happened. And who knew when that was going to happen? And that created a really difficult situation for a lot of event companies that, you know, didn't have a way to pivot because all their funds were tied up with this ticketing company. So our clients like the fact that when someone purchases a ticket, the money goes directly into their bank account. And then third is owning their own brand. Just being able to never see the name Ticket Socket. It feels like their own checkout flow, their own checkout system, which helps with their brand loyalty and awareness.
Yeah, well, and it seems like a no-brainer to align your incentives with your clients' incentives. So instead of being like, you know, a mob boss, be like, hey, well, if you want to sell tickets, you got to use us. And, you know, I remember the Taylor Swift saga about like crashing Ticketmaster and, oh no, we can handle it. Just kidding. We can't. Creating a service that really aligns with the interests of your clients and really makes it that white glove, neat fit where what you specialize in is exactly their desired outcome. How much of that was intentional when you were kind of crafting your offer, putting together what you were going to do, how you were building the platform? How much of it was with that end result in mind of how do we create the perfect solution for our ideal clients? Or was it something you just kind of like iterated on and eventually figured out over time? Like how much of it was intentional and how much of it was just like learning on the fly?
It was always very intentional. It was definitely a gap that we've always seen. You know, there's always been a couple really big companies at the top when it comes to buying tickets to events and just wanting to, of course, support these event companies with owning their own brand money data, but also supporting the customer purchasing tickets, having more transparency and control over these fees that happen to wildly increase ticket prices these days. And so that has always been our intention. It has not always been an easy sell. It did take a while for that to catch on, for some of these things to happen in order for people to really see the value of owning your own brand.
Yes, for sure. Well, and even, you know, talking about fees, it gives me a little PTSD. Anytime we go and do any event now, my wife and I, we basically pull up like 6 or 7 different ticketing sites to see what's, you know, they may advertise a lower ticket cost, but then you go to checkout and it's like, okay, what's the actual fee, processing fee? It's like, why is the processing fee more than the concert ticket? Explain that to me. I don't understand.
Another reason that some people want to work with us, fees is one thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. But there's also that secondary market aspect. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of that you're, like you said, your wife and you, not me and your wife.
Maybe. Yeah.
Pulling up different sites, you're probably checking secondary market sites where people are reselling their tickets and it costs a lot more than if you bought it straight up. So we do have those kind of measures in place where your tickets for your event cannot be resold on a secondary market. If you don't want them to, sometimes that's fine. So,
yeah. Tell me a little bit about Ice Cream Social, because I'm thinking about these companies and also thinking about the context of this idea of network marketing or network effects, where you're able to tap into other people's networks to amplify your ad dollars, your messaging, your brand. How do you incentivize the kind of actions that you want people to take? Is it always discounts? Is it always money back? Is it typically a financial incentive? What are the things that you've seen work for new clients coming in, new prospects coming in, interacting with the brand for the first time, whether it's buying a ticket to an event or something else? What are the kind of incentives that you see really align with their interests to encourage them to spread the word to the people that they're connected to?
Yeah, great question. When we're setting up Ice Cream Social for each event client, we have a little strategy session, of course, and we take a look at certain aspects of their event. You know, what is the average ticket price? What's the average cart total? And most importantly, who's their demographic coming to their event? And that helps us determine what's going to be the best offer to put forward. And just to give a little more background to listeners, Essentially, the way that Ice Cream Social deploys is you go through checkout, you purchase a ticket, and on the confirmation page, you'll be presented with an offer. And that offer, a lot of times, is along the lines of, hey, this event would be way more fun if your friends come with you. Invite your friends. Here's all the little widgets and share any way that you please. And if you get 5 friends to buy, we'll give you a ticket refund. Now, that offer is customizable, as you're saying. It could be 3 friends. It could be 10 friends. You don't have to do a ticket refund. It could be cash back. It could be a free ticket to a future event, depending how your event works. It could be free merchandise or credit to the concessions. So we put together the best offer, really depending on what's the ticket price. Some things, like, let's say we have a client that does a lot of themed like holiday pub crawls. So like a Santa pub crawl, and Ice Cream Social works so well for them, easily can contribute to like 50% of their sales. And so having a reward of only getting 5 friends to buy makes it a little too easy for them to get that reward. So in cases like that, we might push it to 10 friends. Hey, get 10 friends to buy and then you get your reward. But if you're selling tickets to something that is more expensive, more pricey, then maybe it'll be 3 friends or even just 1 friend. So we kind of look at those different factors to determine what's the best offer. I will say anytime a client wants to do free merchandise, like a t-shirt or a hat, it just doesn't work.
People have enough t-shirts and hats.
The first example I gave, let's say get 5 friends to buy and get a ticket refund. Our clients are more than happy to give that ticket refund because, one, a lot of people will get 1 friend, 2 friends, maybe 3 friends to buy. Not everybody's getting 5 friends to buy. So you're still getting a lot of word of mouth sales at no cost to you. But when you do have to give out that reward, the cost to acquire those customers is so much lower than the cost to acquire a customer on a Facebook ad or an email or a billboard or radio or TV, however you're advertising. So giving that reward out is really no big deal.
Right. Because the ad spend remains fixed and your return on ad spend just increases as you leverage that word of mouth, for sure. Now, I'm curious because, you know, the way you laid it out, you basically empower all of your attendees to become affiliate marketers for you and your events, right? And they have a double-sided. Do you do a lot of double-sided incentives, like have your friends use this code to get 10% off? And then if 5 sign up, you get it for free.
Yes. Gosh, did you really researched our product before this? That's exactly how it works. We oftentimes highly suggest, hey, send your friends this promo code. So if clients are willing, clients being the event, are willing to also do a promo code, that just makes it work so much better. They can, you know, look like they're giving their friends the hiccup. So they can look like they're giving their friends the hookup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Because I imagine, you know, if you're just like, hey, I'm going to this cool event, you should come. It's like, okay, sure. But it's like, hey, you know, I got you this 10% off code if you want to go with me. Like that feels much more like they're now doing the service, even though it's in the client's best interest, for sure.
I was just going to say, you feel more comfortable sharing if you're like, hey, bro, I got you this discount. Check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's like a Spartan race or something that's pretty social already. Yeah. And you're just kind of like saying, hey, we should all do this together. This would be fun. Let's all go and get electrocuted in a mud pit. You know, who wouldn't want to do that on the weekend? Are there any... Because I'm thinking about, like, you know, obviously for events and selling tickets, there's a very clear, direct line of how you can leverage this kind of marketing to increase the effectiveness of your ads campaigns. Have you seen other companies that aren't in the event space utilize the software similarly or techniques like this in order to help generate that compounding word of mouth? Because word of mouth typically ends up being the most potent marketing strategy for any business, but it's hard to control. It's hard to influence because you're kind of counting on somebody else to do the marketing for you. So how would the things that you're seeing work for these event companies work for other businesses, whether they're online businesses or local businesses? What are the principles, I guess, that you've seen really work that would apply to a lot of different businesses?
Sure. So this is where it can kind of get fun because we can talk about other types of influencer marketing. And I have worked in all gamuts of influencer marketing, from giving somebody free product in exchange for a post to their social media, all the way to paying a 15-year-old girl $100,000 for a YouTube video. So there's a lot of kind of influencer marketing between that happens. And I will say it's all about that authenticity and creating content. And if you're wanting to do, we'll start on the lower end. So if you're a company wanting to do word of mouth marketing, influencer marketing, get some user generated content going, the first place you want to start is your email database. You want to send an email to them and really work on cultivating them. Use them to help you create content. Leverage them to help you get the word out. And the best thing you can do is just make it easy for them. You can send an email asking them to share, but you need to give them a share link. You need to give them a pre-populated post. Like, you have to spoon feed them and make it so easy if you want to see results. And there has to be something in it for them. So just kind of think of those two pieces. If you're trying to activate your existing customer database or prospects, there's got to be something in it for them. And you got to make it so, so easy. So that would be the first place to start. The second place, if you want to get into kind of more of that traditional influencer marketing, I'm using bunny ears for our podcast
air quotes, list, yes.
YouTube air quotes. If you want to get into more of that traditional influencer marketing, I suggest don't just dive right in. The best thing you can do is kind of sit back, really do your research and find influencers who truly align with your brand, who align with your core values, and get to know them. Engage with their content on the regular, create dialogue, kind of, you know, essentially kind of like dating. Get to know them for a few months before you start pitching them. One, you might find after following them for a few months, maybe they're posting things that, you know, you're not super comfortable with. You need to kind of give that time. Or maybe you've just realized after you've been engaging in their comments, you've realized, okay, their audience isn't the same as the audience you're looking to attract. So really spend that time getting to know some of these influencers. And they do not need to have millions of followers. You can get really great results from these micro influencers who maybe have 5,000, 10,000 followers. So do your homework, get to know them, and then you can kind of engage in whatever offer. But again, there's got to be something in it for both of you before you can have a successful campaign.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And that follows into the next thing I want to ask you about, which is influencer agencies. So there are agencies that will do all the in-between steps on your behalf of identifying the influencers that have the right audience, making the pitch, crafting like what's the price, what's the campaign look like, and managing all of that, you know, but there are things that you lose when you go through an agency versus when you do it yourself. What are the questions that a business owner that wants to do more influencer marketing or get into more social user generated content, what should they consider when thinking about doing it themselves versus working with an outside agency to help them with those connections?
Sure. So I have worked on both sides. I've worked in the agency world working with influencers, and I've helped represent the influencer as well. And I would say, yes, if you're going to work with an agency, there's pros and cons. You need to understand intimately how this agency works with these influencers. I work with an agency, Smarty Social Media. So they have really great influencer relationships. And so the cool thing about that is, yes, some agencies will have a software. They can plug in all your keywords and things that you're looking for and pull up a list of influencers and go pitch them on your behalf. But what I've found is if you work with an agency who does have heavy influencer marketing experience, these are relationships that they have nurtured for years. They are going to industry events with these influencers. They are going to dinner. They're having fun weekends with them. Like, they know these influencers pretty intimately, and they know what kind of content they're going to create, and they can match you up the right way. So I would kind of understand that piece if you're going to work with an agency. Are they using a software to pull a list for you, or are they, do they actually know a lot of these influencers? And then the other benefit of working with an agency that I'm going to explain in case you're doing this yourself, so you can put this together, is an agency, one, will put together typically a really great contract. And that's something that you need to think about. You can't just wing it, send them a DM and work a deal. You need a contract. And there's a few key things that you want in this contract. One, you're going to want whitelisting capabilities. And essentially all that means is you get essentially advertising access to that post that that influencer creates. So you can put spend behind it and it runs through that influencer's profile rather than you reposting it and boosting it through your own profile, essentially. So you want to make sure that you have that worked out. If you don't know what that is, you might not be ready for influencer marketing because essentially you want to get the most out of it. This cannot be a one-day blip on the map for you. You need to know how to give that influencer marketing legs for as long as you can. And the second piece of that to kind of define as long as you can in that contract, you want to make sure that you understand usage rights. How long can you use that content? Some influencers may only allow you to use it for 1 month or 1 year. You need to know what that is and then make sure you set a reminder in your calendar to stop using it after that time. So those are a couple important things to remember. And then the third piece is clearly outlined brand guidelines, essentially, that have a full list of all the things you can and cannot say. This was pretty important in a past life of mine working in medical device. There's things that you cannot say, not because you don't want an influencer to say it, but you are paying this influencer to create content. If they say something that legally the FDA is going to come down on you, if they say that, then you're on the hook. So you do have to make sure you have clearly defined guidelines of what can and can't be said. And then the same way, you almost want to spoon feed them. Hey, you've got some creative control, but these are the boundaries I need you to play in. Here's some suggested content that you could wordsmith, but we do need final approval before you post.
Those are all great tips and things that I haven't even considered before. I'm not totally a noob when it comes to influencer marketing and working out brand deals, but the length of time that you can use this, the content they've created and the terms for promoting on their platforms versus your own. I think those are all really great tips. Where can people go to connect with you to learn more about what you're up to, both at the companies that you're working with and you personally?
Sure. So if you want to learn more about me and the companies I work with, you can go to ashley-stanford.com or ticketsocket.com or icecreamsocial.io. Going to get you with that one. It's dot.
That's got to have the .io in there for a technology, a forward-facing technology company for sure.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure to link all of those in the show notes below so you can click over, learn more about Ashley, connect with her if you feel like TicketSocket or Ice Cream Social or any of these companies that she's working with can be helpful for you and your business. Ashley, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and share your expertise today. So I would say that my number one takeaway from my conversation with Ashley is that if you were going to do some kind of incentive to allow your customers, clients to turn around and invite their friends to do business with you as well, whether it you sell t-shirts or you sell software as a service, or you have an agency of some sort, is make it a double-sided incentive. And don't make it a double-sided incentive with a free t-shirt or a free hat, but make it a financial incentive. That's really what's going to give teeth to the offer of what you're giving them and giving them a compelling reason to not just share what you do with their friends and with their network, but to have it be of a service to their friends. So they don't see it as like, hey, this person that I follow is just telling me to go and buy this thing, but they've worked out a discount for me if I'm interested. I think that's a really smart way to go about it and something that you can definitely set up with coupon codes, with affiliate marketing and affiliate software to really try and encourage that compounding word of mouth and to get more people in the door. Make sure to check out the links in the show notes to go and learn more about Ashley, what she's up to, about TicketSocket, Ice Cream Social, and all the other places that she is online. Thanks for listening to another episode of Honest Marketing. And until next time, be honest.